All right, great. Thank you, Jason. I'm Will. I'm an alcoholic, and appreciate you guys having me here this morning. My sobriety date is May 13th, 2020, and my home group is Abbott Road Men's Discussion Group. Meet in South Buffalo Saturday mornings at 11:30. I have a sponsor in AA. He knows he's my sponsor. And it's my job to remain sponsorable and teachable. And I sponsor other men in this program. And I usually just start off with those things because those are, for me, those are the non-negotiables. Those are the things that I do whether or not I feel like doing them. And they're just a few of the many different tentacles that keep me engaged in this program. Especially when I'm not, when I don't feel like doing it. That's why I call them the non-negotiables. They're basically just all the simple suggestions we hear when we first get here. But I don't know, my story is basically just the summation of it is just a lot of attending Alcoholics Anonymous meetings without actually obtaining any sobriety, without like I mentioned, my sobriety date is 2020, and I first started going to AA in 2010 and went pretty regularly for those 10 years, and never even collected a 30-day coin. But another thing too is that with I haven't been on a Zoom meeting in a while, and it's kind of cool. You get to hear a different message, see some different faces you never have seen before and whatnot. But it actually the Zoom played a pretty big role in my early sobriety. Because at that point in 2020, that's when everything was like in May 2020 is when I went into treatment, and when I got out, everything was still shut down, and it was kind of a lot of word of mouth meeting. Like a lot of the groups would meet in the parking lot at the church. Some were doing pop-up meetings at different parks and whatnot. But Zoom played a big role in that. I did one Zoom meeting. They met every morning at 9 a.m. There was like a big Texas contingent, North Carolina and Buffalo. Nice to be here today. It's a different format. I haven't attended a while, and I appreciate you guys having me. So like I mentioned, those 10 years of trying to get sober and not getting sober, I always said the same thing about AA didn't work for me. And what I was really saying was that I didn't want to do the work in AA. But really what it comes down to is it's a first step problem. Trying to manage my life in a way that I wouldn't drink and being unsuccessful. So it took me a long time to see that my life was unmanageable. I'm a really bad manager of my own life, and I can't set things up in a way that I won't drink on my own. And to be powerless means zero power, like lack of power being my dilemma. That's not some power, a little power, sometimes having some power. It's zero. And for me, the consequences never really did anything. It never scared me. I mean, I started getting arrested at 14, and that went on forever. And if when I got here, if you asked me how my life is unmanageable, I would have told you it's well, the DWIs, I drink and I get into arguments and I get evicted from my house every other month that I'm living in, and all the stuff, all the consequences of my actions, I would have told you that's how my life is unmanageable. But really, it was my life is unmanageable because I'm going to AA meetings and I'm sharing whatever I heard in the meeting the night before. And I'm lying to my sponsor about what's really going on with me, and then I'm leaving the meeting and going home and getting loaded. That was me, and it was always tomorrow. I'm gonna get loaded today, but tomorrow I'm gonna start taking this serious. And clearly that was not the case. It was a first step problem all along. That mental obsession and that true belief that this time was going to be different and that I was going to figure out how to control and enjoy my drinking. So at one point during that 10-year span, the best thing I could come up with was the geographical change. And I wasn't necessarily under the delusion that I was just going to move out to Colorado and everything was going to be fixed. But I did think that maybe it would spark some kind of hope, some kind of better future out there. I don't know, just something different. So I went out there and I was staying with family for a while and just kind of white knuckling it. And, got a job out there and eventually got my own place. And, the wheels fell off like they always do. I wasn't doing anything for my spiritual condition. I wasn't going to meetings, nothing. And, started drinking whiskey and met some people out there, started partying with them. And so out there, though, my family in Buffalo, a lot of them drink like how I drink. And my family out in Colorado, they're not like, they don't drink like how we drank. And my cousin came over to my apartment one day and saw how I was living. And he was just like, "This is insane, dude. I got to take you to the hospital. Like, you got to go to treatment. There's no other option." And so I wound up out there in treatment and wound up in the program out there. And this is just a perfect example of being powerless over alcohol, just having no defense whatsoever against the first drink. I was in a sober living house with a few other guys, and we were going to meetings together. I had a sponsor, but it was the same old deal like I was doing back in Buffalo. I'm lying to the guy, and we schedule a time to go through the book, and I got a million other things I got to do that day, and I can't show up, and all those kinds of things. And so I got offered a gig. I was a musician for a while, and my buddy asked me if I could come do a gig on this rooftop. And I told my sponsor about it. I'm like, "Yeah, I'm gonna go play a show." But he's like, "You sure that's a good idea?" He's like, "You're like 2 weeks out of rehab and whatever. You're going to a bar." And I'm like, "Dude, I'll be fine." Like, I got there immediately, told my buddy, like, "Hey, I'm in AA now. I'm sober. I don't want any drinks. Please don't even offer them to me because musicians get free drinks the whole time when you're there and stuff." So he's like, "All right, yeah, no problem." About an hour later, I'm getting ready, setting up all my gear and whatnot, about to start playing, and he asked me, he's like, "Hey, I'm going to get some drinks. You sure you don't want one?" And I said, "Yeah, grab me a Dos Equis." Just like that, not even thinking about it, had zero intention whatsoever, and found myself with a beer in my hand. And that's just a perfect example of just not having any defense against the first drink going on. It didn't matter what my intentions were. I went out, and there was nothing that was going to stop me from having that first drink. A weird thing at after that point out in Colorado, a weird thing kind of happened because I was still kind of going to meetings, but not really. And wasn't working with my sponsor anymore, wasn't doing any step work. And all of a sudden, all my life out there kind of like took off materialistically. I had some money in the bank, I got a car back, I was driving for the first time in almost a decade. I started a business, met a beautiful woman, like all the things, more than I could have even asked for. But the whole time, it was like I was walking on eggshells because I knew that I had this disease and I just wasn't doing anything about it. Yet on the outside, my life looked pretty great. And even at that point where I had more than I could have ever wanted or asked for, I wasn't able to sleep at night. And that just tells me that like that was just me, struggling with this untreated alcoholism, not doing anything for my spiritual condition, that trying to fill this black hole, this void, this spiritual malady with a million external things, all the material things in the world. And there's not enough. You could have given me $1 billion. It wouldn't have mattered. Like, there was not enough external things on the planet to really do anything for this internal condition that I was struggling with, that I was dying from, this untreated alcoholism. And so sure enough, I mean, within a 6 month period, the wheels fell off and just ended in dramatic fashion. And then when I was leaving Colorado, really on the plane home is when I believe I truly took the first step for the first time. Like, actually, innermost self truly came to this acceptance of my condition, of my disease, of alcoholism. And it's pretty simple. It was just, leaving Colorado, seeing the Rocky Mountains in the distance, and just realizing to myself that I ran away from Buffalo to come here for a better life. Now I'm fleeing from here back to Buffalo 100 times worse off than when I got here. And there was no one left to blame. I could not point the finger at anyone or anything other than myself. And I realized at that point that I knew where the solution was. And I had to admit to myself that I did not do this thing fully. It was like I tried everything in the program except for the whole God thing. And turns out that's kind of the whole point of this. So I basically was just, I was trying to get sober on the fellowship, just trying to take the easy way out like I did with everything else in my life, trying to cut corners. And that's just not how it works here. So finally coming back to Buffalo, going back into treatment again and just getting back into the program. It's like when I was asked this time, are you willing to go to any lengths? I said yes, and I truly meant that. So my second day out of treatment, I went to a meeting. We were in a parking lot in Orchard Park outside of the church. It was still, everything was shut down. And a guy, I shared, I'm Will, I'm an alcoholic. I just got out of rehab and all that. And some guy shared behind me and kind of caught my attention, whatever he said. And he introduced himself after the meeting. And he said he lives pretty close to me. He's willing to drive me to meetings. And he even texted me later that night just to let me know he was serious. So I was like, all right, this guy seems to be taking an interest in me. And if there's one thing I've learned in 10 years of going to meetings and not getting sober, other than where the meetings are, it's that I'm pretty sure I can't do this alone. So I asked him to sponsor me. I basically vomited my whole life story to him in the car the next day, and his eyes were kind of wide, and he was just like, I'm like, will you sponsor me? He's like, yeah, sure. And so that was 6 years ago, and this August I'm actually getting married, and he's actually going to be the best man at my wedding. So that's definitely not the case with all sponsor sponsee relationships, that's for sure. I mean, I sponsor a guy where I think the only single thing we really have in common actually is alcoholism, but it works for us. I mean, he's gone through the book, he's done the work. But I just so happen with my sponsor, we happen to develop almost like a family type of relationship at this point. We've been through a lot together. So yeah, right away though, he was like, you've been, I was in treatment for a few months. He's like, I'm pretty sure we're ready. Let's get right into the book, man. And like when he opened the book and showed me that first page that was blank and said, that's how much you know about sobriety. And I've heard that before, but this time I truly, I knew he was right. Because if I knew anything about this, then I wouldn't be back in, a dumpster fire of a situation for the umpteenth time, And I don't know, when we talk about surrender, and for me, what that looked like is just not fighting it anymore, in the sense of I stopped asking why. There was no, one guy from my home group said, hey, I can pick you. It was my first home group. We met Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. And that was crucial for my sobriety. It gave me somewhere to be every day. And he's like, look, I'll pick you up every day for the meeting, but we got to get there an hour early and you got to make the coffee. And I was like, all right, I can do that. And he showed me what service work was. And just forever thankful for those guys that were just pillars in my life, my early sobriety, that foundation. It's like these things that I were doing in my early sobriety had no idea of how great of an impact they are. This, that foundation, those first three steps, the initially getting into service work, just really making it a priority, having no idea the importance of that and how just essential that would be for the rest of my forever, really, for the rest of my sobriety. And yeah, so when we were starting to get into the book, it was, like I said, no more asking why. It was just, I guess, like I love the term beaten into a state of reasonableness, because that's what it took to me. I mean, I remember during my last detox out in Colorado, I think I said the most honest prayer of my life. It was like 2, 3 days into it, just horrible, on my buddy's couch. I wasn't even in like a detox unit in a hospital or anything. And I just said, God, please get me back to AA. That as simple as that. It wasn't, oh, please get rid of these withdrawal symptoms or anything like that. It was just, please guide me back to AA because I know there is a solution there. I see it working in plenty of other people. And I just know that I haven't done this thing fully. I knew that I was cutting corners and finally getting into the work. The one thing that was really emphasized to me when we were reading We Agnostics, my sponsor said something I'll never forget. And he said, I didn't get you sober. I definitely can't keep you sober. Only God can do that. And I have a God in my life, but you can't have him. You need to find your own. And what he was trying to emphasize to me there was that it's my own conception. I don't have to believe in what he believes. There's no one's going to tell me specifically what it is. And I mean, even in the steps, it says in two different steps as we understood them. So that, being my own conception, that I was able to buy in from that because it was, I never did well with any kind of like authority or like, this is what you have to do or this is what you have to believe, anything like that. But it being my own conception, I was able to finally open my mind enough to that maybe there is something. And other than that, too, I really didn't have any other options. I was hoping there was something. So yeah, that was really emphasized to me. And then when we said the third step prayer in his living room on our knees, and I know I took the third step because I immediately picked up a pen and began writing. And there was always a, you always hear at meetings, people are with the fourth step, it's always this huge thing and this gigantic task. And I don't know, maybe I'm just a sick puppy, but I couldn't wait to do it. I just wanted to get through it, to get over it. I had done the 1, 2, 3 shuffle or whatever you want to call it a million times. And I was like, I just kind of made a commitment to myself when I was in treatment that it's like, all right, I've never even done the steps. This is a 12-step program. And the insanity of going to a 12-step program, not doing the steps, I was like, all right, I can at least try that. And if in 6 months or a year from now, I'm still miserable, I know where all the bars are, all the, no, none of that stuff is going anywhere. But I'm gonna actually make an honest attempt at this recovery thing for the first time in my life. And I mean, the biggest thing for me was just not listening to myself anymore and being able to take direction, just accepting the fact that if I had the answers, I wouldn't be in this boat anymore. And just finally being able to take direction for the first time. And that looking at that list and going over it, my sponsor is like, just everything came back to fear and everything just all roads led back to me. It's like, the book talks about, there's the line there it talks about decisions based on self, which put me in a position to be hurt. And it's like, I can basically chalk up every problem that's ever happened to me to that essentially. And there was just the common theme from my first fourth step, which was basically a thesaurus. There's a million people on there, but the common theme was, something that I did, someone reacted to it, and now I'm pissed off at them for their reaction. But it led back to me and my actions, and just, now I there's a retreat that we do every February, and out on the lake, out in Derby, and it's a great weekend of fellowship and steps and speakers, and just great. And we excuse me, we set aside hour, I don't even know, 5, 6 hours or something on Saturday specifically for fourth and fifth steps. And we'll have breakfast and then somebody does the lead on 4 and 5, and then we have all that time. And a couple years ago it was the first time this happened to me, but I always do, write my inventory. That's my annual inventory that I do and do a fifth with someone there. And a couple years ago, I did my fifth step and then I went downstairs and someone came up to me and asked if I would hear theirs. And I said, absolutely. And I got so much more out of hearing that guy's fifth step and going over his with him that day than I did doing my own. And I thought that was pretty cool. And Same thing this year. I got to hear a few different fifth steps this year, which was an honor. And it's just a great weekend, that spiritual retreat. I look forward to it every year. It's kind of at a point in the year too where it's like crappy weather out. There's really nothing going on, and we just have this full 3 days dedicated to our spirituality, enhancing our spiritual condition, because that's really what it's all about. I mean, that anytime someone has, is a part of this deal and doing the deal and has obtained sobriety and a relationship with God and has done the work and goes back out, I mean, you can blame it on a million different things, but it's simply, it's from a failure to enhance our spiritual condition. I mean, that's been my story every step of the way. Anytime I picked back up, that's what it was in simple terms. So yeah, I look forward to that weekend every year though. And yeah, man. But I mean, fear, don't get me wrong, that's it, just because like the fear thing, it still can come up frequently, a lot more than I would have realized, I guess, early on. And but today it's like anytime when something goes wrong today, it's not the same. Like I'm able to address it. I'm able to, if it's a amend I have to make quickly, or it's like when I do something wrong today, I used to just, it just became a way of life to be stepping on the toes of others and not caring and just, I got to get mine. And today, as soon as I do something wrong, that it's like it comes up immediately, or it comes up in my inventory that night and it needs to be addressed. But the fear thing, man, it's like, I mean, I have a nice full life today as a blessing of this relationship with my higher power and this program. And but I, if there's one thing that I guess over the last year that has taught me is that like really maintaining that spiritual condition, maintaining that relationship with God throughout the day in more of an informal way. I don't know if that makes sense, but I guess what, so when I got my coin a week or two ago at my home group, and it was kind of the first time where I was like, yeah, there's not, I don't really have a whole bunch of like great stuff to tell you guys about this past year. It was actually pretty terrible. It was not a great year. And my sobriety, it was definitely the most challenging year that I have. And the way that my brain works ever since I got sober, it's like my sobriety date's May 13th. And so it's kind of like my years in my head are from May to May, because it was like getting sober, that was almost like day one. And I've been blessed to have been able to live two different lives in one lifetime. I don't know. I mean, not many people can say that, but that's been my experience. It's two different lives. So I was kind of going every year when around my sobriety day to kind of reflect on the last year and whatnot. And it's like, yeah, this year was tough, man. I mean, this today actually is the 1 year anniversary of my soon to be would have been mother-in-law passed tragically a year ago. So that was kind of the first thing that happened. And then, that was just a tragedy and bunch of other life things. I just, financial crisis, family stuff. I mean, I could go on forever, but it was kind of, I always was able to kind of bring up whatever was going on with me, talk about it with my sponsor, other guys in AA, go and do some service, be of service to someone else. And things just kind of went away or were better. And I felt like there was a point, probably last summer, fall time, where I had to call a guy from my home group and was like, dude, I don't know what's going on. All the things that I've done just don't seem to be working. And I actually was talking to another guy earlier this week about it, where he's been sober a lot longer than I have. And he kind of said the same thing, where he's like, I'm doing all these things and I'm not getting the same results. And I'm like, and kind of what this taught me was that it's kind of been a common theme lately that's been coming up, is that I have to continually evolve and grow with my spirituality, especially the longer I'm sober. It's like in the beginning, the simplest thing was like a seemed like I did a lot less and got a lot more early on. And I need to continually evolve in my sobriety. And that's kind of what I was talking to this guy about. I was like, that's been my experience, man, is that like even something is like my prayer life. I mean, early on, a simple serenity prayer and God, please remove the obsession or please keep me sober today. That was sufficient in the morning to go on with the rest of my day. And so when I called my buddy from my home group and kind of told him that, like, dude, this anger is cropping back up, fear, I can't seem to get rid of it. I really don't know. All the things that I've been taught that have worked don't seem to be working anymore. So he just simply said, he's like, all right, well, where are you at with 10 and 11? And I was like, well, I don't know. I mean, I kind of went over my routine with him. And so I wake up extremely early for work. I have to leave my house by 5 a.m. for my job. And so the whole, like, you know, I'm pretty sure if I woke up at 4:30 and started meditating, I probably would just fall back asleep and be late for work every day. So that just isn't going to work. But so I would say a prayer, go on to work and kind of go on throughout my day. But we kind of came to the conclusion that I definitely need to spend some more time on my morning routine. I need to invite God in and just spend a little more time. And, you know, especially with that 11th step in the morning. And so now I found today what works for me is like, I'll get to my office and sometimes right away, something needs to, usually I have a free half hour or so before I really have to do much. And, but sometimes I have to get right into it and I'm busy for a couple hours, but no matter what the case is, there's always at some point where I have some free time and I just do a quick meditation, a few minutes. You know, I do a little reading. I always read the third and seventh step prayers. No matter what is going on, I do that immediately. And, just spend that little more time, just simple things, but just essential because, I don't know, man, that conscious contact with God, it's like God does the heavy lifting. That's how I look at it. But it is my responsibility to maintain that relationship because it's the relationship with God that is, you know, treating my alcoholism. It's the thing that's keeping me sober. It's simply having faith in my experience is not enough. I can't just say, yep, I believe. Thank you. And just kind of sit at home all day on the couch, not doing anything, not taking any. This is a spiritual program of action. So I have to take action to get closer to this higher power. And so I don't know, man, it's I wouldn't say it's like an end all cure all, but something changed after I started doing that. And all the other things too, all, you know, that we talk about service and, you know, sponsee relationships, all that. But, you know, another thing I wanted to kind of touch on too, that I skipped over with the steps was the whole, the amends process. For me, that was kind of the first part of the steps that I guess I really started to kind of balk at is not even making the amends, just making the list, step eight. And, I went to, Abbott Men's one morning and I brought up the fact that, you know, I didn't want to make this list. And, the one guy looked at me and he's just like, man, how long do you want to stay sick? Like, that's really what it comes down to. He's like, you're not going and knocking on any doors. You're not even calling anyone. You're just simply making a list. So I did that and, you know, my sponsor, of course, gives me all the easy ones first. He's like, go make the amends with your mom and your sister and all the family ones. And then, you know, so I'm moving and grooving. But that for me, the amends have not been easy. Like I go to conferences or different, you know, Founders Day, different retreats. And like I hear these amends stories about like, I owed this guy $1,000 and I finally stopped by his house and he was $1,000 short on his home that was being foreclosed. And now we work together, all these like miracles that have, I'm like, wow, that's incredible. That hasn't been my experience at all. It's more so kind of hitting people up being like, hey, I know I kind of screwed you over on some money and yeah, I'd like my money back, you know? And they just have not been easy for me, but they're a vital, essential part of this whole process. But I did have one experience with the amends that I'd like to share with you guys that well, it didn't turn out great at all, but I was approaching it from a selfish perspective because selfishness and self-centeredness still today gets me into trouble. But I went to this concert and I saw this guy, we made eye contact and I know he saw me and I kept trying to I was kind of calling his name, kind of walking up to him. And I should have took the hint that like he was clearly ignoring me and didn't want to speak to me. And I went up to him anyways and started to give the whole spiel real quick. And he pushed me straight up. And that look in his eyes, like he was ready to throw hands and just told me, get the F away from him and blah, blah, blah. I don't talk to him. And I was like, kind of dumbfounded, but I walked away and called my sponsor the next day and I was like, I'm thinking we're gonna put our heads together and figure out the perfect plan of how to contact this. He's like, dude, cross him off the list. Like, you took the action, you went up to him, you were willing. Your amends to him is to stay the hell away from him forever. That's it. He doesn't care that you're sober and you're on a new path, living a spiritual life. You screwed the guy over. And he doesn't ever want to speak to you again. And you made that very clear. So I was like, okay, cross him off. So that was there. There was plenty of other ones that didn't go like that. And people did hear what I have to say. But, that one just kind of showed me that, like, it doesn't matter. People don't have to accept my amends, but it's like, I have to do it for my own sobriety and I have to get right with others. But in that case right there, simply getting right with that dude is to just stay away from him. So I early on in my sobriety, I think I was like 9 months sober. I was given the opportunity to start working and as a substance abuse counselor. And for anyone, especially anyone in sobriety, especially early sobriety, I would definitely not recommend this particular job necessarily, but for me, it was a blessing. And I think at that point in my sobriety, especially, I didn't really have any other experience with anything else, other than alcoholism, addiction, and all these things. And I had taken some classes, with like out in Colorado. I was kind of trying to do that out there, but still getting loaded. So of course that didn't work, but I was now presented the opportunity to start doing that. And so, I deal with people struggling with alcoholism and addiction on a daily basis. And just very thankful that early on, my boss, the guy who hired me early on, he was also in the program and he really preached to us the 10th step. He was like, if you're sitting in a session with someone and like you're talking about your own recovery, like, is that really helping them? Or is that just kind of like a selfish thing you talking about yourself? Like, you really need to be constantly taking inventory and what are your intentions with, like, we're trying to help these people. And it's a lot different than 12-step work. It's not 12-step work. I mean, the extent of anything regarding that would be like, giving someone a meeting list or maybe suggesting that maybe they try that out. And that's about the extent of it. But in being there though, after a few years, I realized that I was not going to be able to do this forever, not even for much longer, really. It was not really for me anymore. I've been there over 5 years now. And, but I don't know. I do believe God puts us in places for specific reasons. And, I do work with medical professionals on a daily basis. And it kind of pointed me to, I knew I was going to start going back to school. I didn't really know for what. And it kind of pointed me into the direction of physician assistant, something that I never was never on my bingo card. I never thought I would be in any kind of even medical professional of any capacity. So in doing so though, in going back to school, it's pretty rigorous coursework for that stuff. And that fear and that even initially going back, that the same things why I believe I was when I started drinking of like not feeling like I didn't fit in. All those things kind of crop back up. The fear, especially, man, like that's I say, even if I'm going to take a big exam or something, it's like overwhelming. Like I'll just say a quick prayer, and it's not from a selfish nature. It's more just to remove this fear from me, help me turn it over to you, to help to be useful to my family. I mean, that's the whole point of all this. And I don't know, man. I have to bring God into that situation, essentially, like I have to with everything else. But this whole experience with going back to school, especially, and working towards a new career change, it those these defects of character just have popped back up, that they're not gone. There's some that I didn't even know were there until getting sober. Like the first one that comes to mind would be perfectionism. I mean, I never completed anything when I was getting loaded. I would start things, never finish them. I would never show up. I didn't care if I got anything done. I just wanted to, sit home and drink by myself all day and get loaded and not show up for anyone or anything. So perfectionism was never really on my radar. And then, I get sober and all of a sudden everything's got to be done perfect. And it's just, that's gotten me into some trouble too. And it's like the defects are like, even being aware of them is, it's important to be aware of them, but it's like I ask God to remove them because they're essentially a part of who I am. So I can't on my own remove them or just simply stop doing this thing. It's like I got to pray about it. I have to continue working and living in these steps. And and really this thing, I believe when I was going to meetings, like I talked about earlier, trying to get sober on the fellowship, it was like this light switch effect where I would flip the light switch on. I'm like, okay, it's time for AA. Go to the meeting, say hi to everybody, shake a bunch of hands, share, maybe even go and get a cup of coffee afterward. And then flip the light switch off, go back to doing exactly whatever I wanted to do, living how I was living, lying, cheating, stealing, all that. And today it's like my program is like when I'm at work or when my buddy at and Abbott Men's tells me all the time, he's like, you want to do a spiritual action today? Go home and do the dishes. Like things like that. It just meaning that it's the spiritual principles that we talk about, like they have to be, this has become a way of life. And it's not, there's never a time, this is the time for AA. Okay, now I'm going to go back to doing that. No, it's just how I live my life on a daily basis. What am I doing when no one's around? That's truly what is building character and humility and just really has become a way of life, man. I mean, we talk about beyond my wildest dreams. It's like, I don't know, when my first week in rehab, I thought my life was over and I was like, praying to God, just please, I hope I didn't ruin everything. Please, I just want to have a family, like a wife and kids. But I didn't know back then, like, we're not supposed to be praying. All I knew was to like pray for things that I wanted or whatever. But that's in sincerity, that's what I want. I was like, I hope it's not all over. I was 31. I thought I had ruined my life and there's nothing left. And it's like, little did I know, my life was just beginning. I mean, that was the first week of my life, essentially. And now, this August, like I'm getting married to an incredible woman. And like I said, my sponsor is my best man. And like these are just all things that it's not me doing it, clearly. The more I'm able to stay out of the way, the better things go. And it's just as simple as that. Just one more thing I'll share, and I'll end with this too, I guess, is that talking about earlier, constantly evolving in sobriety, constantly growing spiritually. I've kind of my experience has taught me that I sort of just need to be in places where I may be of use to someone, even if it's not making sense in my mind of why I'm there. It's just, okay, maybe there will be an opportunity. And so we moved out to the country a couple years ago. We live out near in Oakfield, out near Batavia. And there's meetings out here. There's not as many, but I kind of had, it was, I kept my home group, and I still, you know, I work and go to school in Buffalo still. So I kept Abbott Men's. I drive there on Saturday. I wasn't willing to get rid of that. That home group is, as long as I'm in Western New York, that will be my home group. But I did have to start, you know, finding new meetings, and it's, you know, different places to go that have meetings in the new area where I'm living, because I can't just go to drive 40 minutes to Buffalo every time I want to go to a meeting. So, you know, I went to a couple different ones, and there was this one that I was going to that was a real small meeting, and it's just different than what I guess I was used to, but I was like, oh, I think I need to be there. I want to, in some way, like try to do something out here, be of service in some way to this new community where I'm living and in their AA. And it was just one meeting that I just never felt like going to, but it's like, well, I just kept going. And sure enough, like I met this guy there, a newcomer, and gave him my number like we always do. And you know, 99% of the time you never hear from him again. But sure enough, 2 days later, he called me, and he was crying, and he drank. And so we started working together. And I was like, man, like I did not want to go to that meeting that day. I really didn't. Everything, it just seems like the common theme is any kind of, it's, this is how I know my alcoholism is still, it's still there. It's like my buddy Dan always says that it's like the flames are out, but the pilot light is still lit. Like that little light is still there. So, and it's like anytime there's a spiritual action that's going to enhance my spiritual condition, get me closer to God, it my first thought is always that I don't, to not do it. It's just, that's my first thought. And then the second one kicks in, it's like, no, that's the right thing to do. And just continually trying to put myself in places where I may be of maybe of use to others, maybe of service in some way. You know, that's kind of my story. And I don't know, I appreciate you guys for having me here this morning. And I know we got a few minutes left, so yeah, I think that's all I got. And thank you guys for having me.